And we're live. What's up, guys? It's Jordan from Fighting for My Voice. I hope that everyone's having a great day. And I'm here with Laura. So I'll let Laura introduce herself.
Hi, guys. Laura Smith here from SLP, Mommy of Apraxia. And I'm just excited about this topic. I wanted to do a Zoom on this topic because it's something that Jordan personally has taught me just from knowing him. And I think there's a huge misconception, not just with me, but with other speech therapists and maybe parents who might not understand this idea of a distinction between what looks like word finding to the average listener or even a clinical listener like myself, and what might actually be more of an apraxic moment or whatever you call it. So
yeah, apraxia moment, apraxia issue, whatever you want to call it. Anything's fine.
Yeah. So anyways, if you could maybe just what I want to know is just like if you could do a brief, what is the distinction between word finding and what you call like a pause or gap with apraxia or
Awesome. So it's like really with word finding is what we are talking about when we are talking about this is when you cannot find the word inside of your brain. So for example, for me, I am awful with names. I will forget my friends' names, even that I've known for years, and my friends will think that I'm an awful friend, and I'll be like, this is a word finding thing, I promise. And also other people might have this same issue as well, because we tend to forget certain names and such. So this can also be with other people as well, which is what
people that don't have apraxia, right?
It's like people who don't, which is why I feel like when you put that on your page, people were like, oh, like I have this too, but they didn't have apraxia. But we were actually talking about a different thing.
Yes.
And this is like what we, and like this is what we call like an apraxia moment sort of thing. So it's, for example, it's how this kind of gotten brought up, is that I was doing one of my lives, because if you watch my page, I go live like all the time, because I'm Jordan, I could talk all day long if I want to. And I was doing a live, and I was trying to order in a drive-thru. And I was trying to order a venti cold brew coffee, because I've switched up my coffee order within the past year, because for years I would limit myself to say a venti iced coffee because it was so much more easier for my motor planning. But then I found out, hey, I don't want to limit myself because I feel like it's going to be more harder to get that word out. So I've really had to retrain my brain as far as, hey, we're not going to limit how much I talk or the things that I say just because my brain knows that it's going to be more hard.
So, and I love that message, because a lot of people do that.
Yes, we limit. I'm sorry. I'm like, yeah. And like, and it's like they like can like limit themselves because they know it's going to be more harder. But if we don't try to expand, then how are we going to expand our motor planning and the things that we can say? So that was one of those moments when I meant to say a venti cold brew coffee, but I said a venti iced coffee. And why? And it's also when I was thinking back, I was thinking, well, why did I say a venti iced coffee? Because I wasn't aware, and this is the key message too, I wasn't aware that I said iced coffee. I thought I said cold brew coffee. But then once I drove off, I was like, did I say iced coffee? Did I say iced coffee? And I was on my live, and people said yes. And I was like, oh, that's not what I wanted. So then once I pulled up, I said, I meant to say a cold brew coffee, because that's what I actually wanted. So it's why I did this, is because the venti iced coffee phrase for my motor planning was so much more accessible in that moment than a cold brew coffee, because that word is more harder for me. And I haven't said it that much in my lifetime. I've probably said the word iced coffee a billion times, if I'm honest. But, you know, with cold brew, I haven't. So that was one of those moments for me when I was like, this is actually an apraxia thing. This isn't a word finding thing, but it's so many people would be like, oh, that's a word.
Yeah. And that's the feedback that we got. And that's a lot of the feedback I got was people being like, oh, well, I do that too. You know, like, don't worry, we all do that. But it's not the same, because in this case, you had like an easy, accessible, known motor plan. And I kind of tell. Yeah. And I see like my kids too. I just call it like, they're just going down this like autopilot. I like to be like, they went on autopilot. And so I'll tell them like, oh, don't go on autopilot. I know it's so easy for you to say, you know, but I want you to change it and say, And so it's different. So I think the message you and I, the reason we decided to do a Zoom now on this is to further expand that, no, these are actually different things. And you know, I can't explain that. Only someone with apraxia can explain it.
That's why I'm here.
Thank you.
So, I'm sorry. I keep asking. It's okay.
No, it's all good. So, so that's how it started, was this idea of coffee. And so we had a lot of, or not this idea, it was that event. And so we had a lot of discussion on it. And then it caused me to kind of look up what word finding is. And so I found a research article, and you know, word finding is this ability to retrieve a desired word, right? And then there's three patterns. So I'm going to go through what this article listed as three patterns. And I want you to kind of say if that has happened to you, or, you know, kind of your thoughts on it. Okay. So the first one would be this idea of a slip of the tongue error. So in this case, you know, let's say I wanted to label my water bottle purple, and I know it's purple, but instead I'm like, it's blue. I mean, it's orange. It's purple. It's purple. This is purple. Like, that would be a slip of the tongue error, and in this article, a word finding error. So does this happen to you? And yeah, how does that manifest? What do you think about that?
It's, I would say when I was more of a kid, that would happen more. And I would also at times think that a certain word would be more harder for me to say. So if I wanted to say, hey, this is a purple water bottle, but blue was more accessible, as I would try to kind of give myself time, and I would be like, this is a blue water bottle, when I knew that it was actually purple. And then I would say, oh wait, what's that word? Oh, purple. Because I was trying to give my brain time to kind of grab that word purple so it could retrieve back to my mouth. So I wouldn't more so say in my case that was a word finding thing. That was more of an apraxia moment where I was trying to give myself time to retrieve it. So,
and what that makes me think, and what that makes me think of too, and we're going to talk about this later, is this idea of coping mechanisms that individuals might be using. And that is definitely, in to me, what you just described, a coping mechanism. And this has implications for school, which is why I think it's so important, because expressively, especially like with colors early on with Ashlyn, or, you know, with other things, like, let's say I said, what color is this? And red was easily accessible. So she'd go red. And I'd be like, is this red? And she'd go, no. Like, okay, but you just said this was red. And then, like, so it just is so insightful that you're able to tell us what's, at least in your situation, obviously everyone's different, but at least in your situation, what was going on, and possibly what was going on there with Ashlyn. And the reason it's important too is that we find a speech therapist and educators and people in the kids' life that we find receptive ways of testing their knowledge. as opposed to just thinking, oh, this kid is talking now, and so we're going to test them on all their knowledge verbally. You know, really, you know, when Ashlyn was younger, I understood that for their measures or whatever, teachers needed to use this form, and it was a verbal expressive test. But I always asked for a counter test that looked at it receptively. And there was always a discrepancy. And that happened with letters and, you know, numbers and colors and shapes. Mm-hmm. Like, so anyway, that to me is a really important point. Okay. So the second word finding error in this article was called the tip of the tongue error. And so this would be like, and this happens to people who don't have apraxia too, which is why people are like, oh, you know.
Yeah.
So I want to know your thoughts on this. A tip of the tongue error would be like, oh, and not because you got older. Like my mom does this. She calls it a senior moment. She's going to kill me when I said
that. Yeah, she's going to be like, Laura, what you doing? What you doing, Laura?
So not a senior moment, but just where people say, oh, I can't think of it. Or, you know, it starts with M. And actually, Ashlyn has started doing this. This is a very recent thing she started doing. Because I think it went along with like being able to read and to write and recognizing the sounds. What do you think about that?
So it's, I definitely do have that at times, and that is way more of a word finding issue than I would say than like an apraxia moment, because the really big distinction between these two is that when you have an apraxia moment, I feel like there's two different things. Either one, a word is more accessible, so it just comes out and it's like automatic is how I like to describe it, or two, you actually know it, but you're trying to give yourself time, and that's what we are calling kind of like a coping mechanism sort of thing. Versus with the word finding, you're literally trying to find the word. So like maybe it's with like a certain type of like food. I'm like, oh, what's that food called? Let's say that I went to a restaurant one time and I ordered something that I liked, but I couldn't recall what it was. That's when I'm trying to look inside my big old brain and be like, okay, what did I get that one time? And then it takes me time to find it. So,
yeah, and this is what people would give us feedback for. Like they would say, oh, well, I do that too, and I don't have apraxia. So this is so helpful because you literally just described the difference. You do experience both of these, but this is how and why they're different. So hopefully this time, Jordan, with this video and explanation, we're really gonna nail this point home.
Yeah, get it in a good way. In a good way, guys.
Yeah, always in a good way. Always
in a good way. We're positive.
With that.
I'm sorry. I'm just cracking jokes. Okay, go.
We're vibing on a different frequency, Jordan, like we always say.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring this point out to what you just said when you're going on to something like you say something automatically or on that autopilot, like I like to describe it, because this is where parents describe their kid says yes when they meant no. This happens all the time. So yes, you might have word finding issues as a person who doesn't have apraxia, but do you say yes when you mean no? Like, no.
Absolutely.
I know you do, but I'm saying I'm saying to the people out there who don't have apraxia, this is like not a thing. Like they don't just, if someone asks me, you know, do I want sauerkraut? I'm not just going to say yes because it was an easy, accessible autopilot thing to do. It's going to be like, no, but I have kids do this all the time. Like I'll hop on Zoom with them, for example, and I'll be like, hey, like, how are you? Did you go to your grandma's this weekend? Yeah. And their parents will be like, no, you didn't. Like, and then they'll tell me. Yeah, they'll tell me they just say yes to everything, or, you know, they get in this like, that's different than word finding. That is just an easy, accessible autopilot response from them. So,
yeah.
All right. The third one this article described was a twist of the tongue error. So they consider this a word finding situation in this article too. So this would be something like a person's trying to say spaghetti and instead they say, or, you know, Getty, spaghetti, I mean spaghetti. So mm-hmm. they're describing this as a word finding error. But I think that you could make the case in your case that something like that could also be an apraxic moment for you. Can you distinguish the difference between something like that or not?
Yeah, because this could be like a word finding issue for people who do not have apraxia themselves for sure. But I feel like when we are talking about people with apraxia, we are really talking about them trying to combine syllables and such. So let's say that I was trying to say the word spaghetti, right? I just said it and I had trouble with the S blend word.
Those
S blends, but I'm going to get them down. But it's, we would actually go spaghetti.
And then
have to keep on, spaghetti. I mean,
a little
hand gesture thing. But
motor helps motor, we say.
Yeah. But that's the difference is that we might have trouble getting each syllable out, which is why I have been working so hard on my repetition, even now as an adult. If I see that, you know, I'm having trouble with a few certain words, I will write those words down and then I'll go back in nighttime and then I'll repeat each syllable and then I'll say the whole word 25 times, which my brain is exhausted after but you know that's what I do now in order to kind of keep up to date with my speech and such. So for me, it's not really a word finding issue. It might just be, hey, my brain is having trouble trying to get these down here so I can say them. And it's going to take some time. And, you know, that's fine. We're allowed to take time. But I feel like that's the really big difference.
And that's where I really feel like speech therapists, we probably aren't doing enough with advocating. Because we're teaching our kids with apraxia to advocate for that extra time instead of, and if like, but the thing is that speech therapists need to know this is a thing. Unless we know this is a thing, we assume it's word finding and chuck it up to their expressive language disorder. And we're like, well, you know, that's just what happens. But if we understand that maybe the child is using a coping mechanism, I'm going to teach them a different coping mechanism. That's, you know, exactly. And I do. And I tell them, like, you know what? Just, it's okay. Take your time. I will wait. And if you don't know
that.
Or you need help, tell me I don't know or tell me I need you need help, you know, but I will wait. So, but I wouldn't have known to do that. You don't know what you don't know. So you have to recognize that this is actually a thing and allow them to do that. So,
I love that.
Yeah. I feel like I had another point to that, but that is the main one just with, I know what I was going to say. A lot of parents ask me why their kid, when I posted this, a lot of parents said their kids will say, can I tell you something? And I've had two kids in the course of my career with apraxia who would do that. And I'd be like, sweetie, just tell me, you know, he'd we're talking and we're in the middle of something and he'd stop. Like, can I tell you something? Yes. Like, what do you want to tell me? But now I realize they might have just been being like, hey, can I have a minute so I can tell you something?
Kind of have that pause.
Yeah. So they can take a minute and formulate. A lot of parents will be like, why did they do that? Or a lot of kids will be like, what did you say? And they'll be like, the parents will be worried and be like, do you think there's something wrong receptively? Do you think that he's not understanding what I'm saying? And I think now that could be, obviously we have clients with receptive language issues, but it could also be this idea of, I need a minute. So you ask them a question and they can do a coping mechanism and say, what did you say?
If
that person repeats it again, and now they just got the time to be able to answer it. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's just really, I think that we kind of learn what kind of works for us. Because if we were to just say to like a random person, like, hey, like my, it's like my actual brain takes more time to get out words and such.
Yeah.
That's not really something that you're going to say to your everyday to day person, which is why now I've kind of developed a different coping strategy. And it's when I meet new people, I just say, hi, my name is Jordan. We'll talk for a few minutes. And then I'll say, also, as I have a speech disorder, it might take me a few moments to get my words out. I don't say any more. I don't say any less. And I've also had parents kind of concerned that I'm explaining myself, but I'm not doing it for them. I'm doing it for me, so I don't feel the pressure to match up with their rate of talking, because there can be this internalized pressure because we compare ourselves so much and we want to be on the same level as each person. So when a person is talking very fast, we might want to match up. And for me, my words are just going to jumble if I try to talk fast, because that is how my talking works for me. So that's why I'll say, hi, my name is Jordan, blah, blah, blah. It's going to take me a moment to get my words out, because it helps me, and there's no sort of like misconception sort of thing, because I've had a lot of misconceptions with my talking, that I'm under the influence of something when I'm not, that I might have an IQ thing.
I hate that one.
I know, and it's like, you know, you're talking and your IQ don't go hand to hand, but also what's also so wrong about a person who might not have an IQ that you might not like? I feel like it's very judgmental. I feel like it's very shallow. That's a rant on its own that I could go
it totally is
about, but yeah.
So that kind of leads us into this idea of coping mechanisms. We already talked about automatically saying, my clients who say yes when they meant no, because their brain immediately grabs that in the moment. Another thing I'll have them do is I might give them that feedback and I'll be like, you said yes. Is that what you meant? And a lot of times they'll be like, and I'll be like, I know. So just take your time. It's okay. And I will wait, because what your voice matters. It, you know, I think
it does.
It does. And what they have to say matters. So I want to talk about that anxiety though, and that pressure speech. So with societal norms and expectations, there is this idea that, you know, I talk, you talk, I talk, you talk. And there's very little pause time, and it's kind of boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
And like you said, okay, for one, this is not how your brain and talking works. But for two, now it's increased the pressure, and increased pressure leads to anxiety. And so
absolutely,
you're big on mental health. And I think this kind of ties into it a little, having anxiety.
It does.
So what do you think?
Yeah, it is for sure. And as I had known, it's when Ashlyn sat on Santa Claus's lap, and when she couldn't get out what she wanted to say right then, but she knew what she wanted to say. She knew it.
Yes.
But it took her time. And she couldn't get it out right then. And then, you know, Santa Claus is just like this. He's like, what do you want? Blah, blah, blah. And then Ashton's like, I need a moment, dude. Calm down, right?
That's exactly it. Like, she knew she wanted power wheel. She'd been practicing power wheel the whole way.
She knew it.
She knew it. And then she guessed it. But you're right. It's this, like, expectation that it's a boom, boom, boom. And she wasn't there. And so he says, what do you want for Christmas? And she, you can see, I could see it in her face. She blanks, like her eyes get big. She's like,
She looks at you because she's like, hey, mom, I'm feeling this anxiousness.
So that was her coping mechanism, was to look to me. And then it caused Santa to be like, oh, you don't even know what you want?
Which, like, I hate that. At the moment, I'm just like, Santa.
I know, right?
I'm sorry.
Like, I know he didn't mean it bad, yeah. But like, that's why we do this.
He didn't, but.
That's why we do this, right? Like, so we can get awareness out there. Not everybody has, you know, the same rate of speech. And, you know, I think working on her now more too, and just being like, maybe prepping her next time, or people had suggested even having a picture and just been like, no, you know it, you can do it. Your voice matters. Your mom doesn't need to answer for you. You can do this. Yeah. We'll wait. For next time. So.
Yeah. And it's like, even things like maybe like notes that she could read, that like she could go back to and touch. I feel like those are key too, so she can kind of have that reference guide, because I know that that does help people with apraxia too, to have those kinds of notes. With me, I don't really find that it really helps me, but I know other people who it might help. But for me, notes just, they can work at times. At times it doesn't. I think it kind of depends on what I'm doing. But for sure, we do have this anxiety piece that does type in. So I feel like our next topic is really like, what can we do for kids with apraxia who also have anxiety as well, because we've did so many talks with adults with apraxia. I think we talked to over 12, is that right?
Yeah, maybe 12, that sounds maybe more. Right. 12 sounds ballparkish, right?
Got it. it's like around 12 people, and it's almost every single adult was like, I do have it.
Yeah.
And you know, we didn't know this until people could self-report it, because people aren't going to self-report it. People aren't, because I mean, too, like, you know, back when I was young, you know, mental health, if you talked about mental health and you were like labeled as like, oh no, like he's like crazy, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, there's such a stigma. I think there's a stigma even still to this day.
There is.
That's a whole nother there topic. Is. Yeah, but so disclosing you have anxiety is almost like, which is almost, I don't know, it's like, disclose you have a speech disorder, disclose you have anxiety. I think all these people would rather both. Say they have, I know you do both, but I think people feel more comfortable doing speech disorder, and there's still even this idea of like, oh, you know, I don't want to
disclose that. Maybe it's too much for them. They don't want to have like a certain amount of labels on them, but I feel like, I just personally feel like the more that we're open about it, the more or less stigma we're going to have, the more that we talk about it, the more that we normalize it and different things like that, we're going to really get out of this place where it's kind of filled with shame, because you should feel shame because of, you know, because I mean, your brain is an organ, just like your heart and your lungs. Your brain can sometimes I don't know if I like to use this word, but malfunction, or I might just be going through some things. And I mean, there are treatments for that.
My mind that, like, sorry, not to interrupt you.
No, go.
Mind that, like, the brain is like one of the most complex organs in our body, and one that is least it's the one that has the stigma. Anything else, like if you talked about your kidney or your heart or your blood pressure or like I mean any of it, everyone's good with that. I saw the heart doctor, I saw my diabetes doctor, everyone's good with that. I saw my brain doctor, people are like, oh
no, back off. Like, and it's like, it's an organ.
Have a doctor for a brain. That's what I want to know.
For sure.
Yeah. And so.
Yeah. And as there's like also different types of treatments that an SLP really cannot offer, if I'm like really honest, but a person like a brain doctor or a psychologist can really treat, which kind of gets into our next topic about different treatment options that are up to date with the current research as well. So would you like to get into that next?
Yeah, I like this because there's only, as much as I want to say, okay, SLPs, we're going to be out here, we're going to teach advocation, we're going to recognize that these kids have, you know, potentially situational anxiety. We also need to recognize that it could go beyond situational anxiety, and we're not the professional to, we kind of have to stay in our lane. Like, we're not the professional to decide whether that anxiety is due to speech or could be due to something else. So collaborating with other professionals, like a psychologist who is technically the expert in mental health, I think is really important. And that's another message that you have too.
Yeah. And it also, just to throw this out there too, it doesn't make you a bad SLP to refer them to a different person. No. If anything, I think that makes you like an A+ SLP. If you're like, hey, like, this child needs another person on our team, and if you work with them, that's how that child, teen, or adult is going to really go far. So I would really like to throw that out there. SLP should never feel bad if a child needs more help beyond them. They can collaborate.
Before you go into your treatment, your treatments, the research-based treatments, I do want to, I'm going to give you an example from Ashlyn that just happened. So Ashlyn has a team, and so she has a speech pathologist, she has a special education teacher, OT, PT, and luckily in her district, they do have like good allocations for mental health. And awesome. And so she does have a psychologist that she sees too for 30 minutes once a week. So
that's awesome.
I know.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That makes me really happy.
It wasn't because of her anxiety. It was because of her ADHD. But either way, it's ended up being so helpful. And I'm going to tell you why, is that, you know, Ashlyn has a really hard time jumping in a group, and kids tend to play in groups. You know, they're in groups on the swings, they're in groups playing basketball, or, you know, jump rope, and, or, you know, whatever. And so she just has always had a really hard time jumping in. So I was saying, this year, I was kind of hoping as a goal, well, not just this year, it's been her whole kind of career, is how can we get Ashlyn integrated and really included with the other kids and get in this group? Well, so as a speech therapist, definitely, and even a SPED teacher and gen ed teachers, you know, that was like, yeah, that seems like a good goal. Let's get Ashlyn, you know, involved and like, you know, integrated in a group. Well, it was only this last time that the psychologist had been working on it with her. She'd taught her all the different skills in like an isolated environment. And then they were going to go transfer it right before we had to go back to quarantine. But they were going to transfer it to the playground when Ashlyn told her, I don't want to play in groups. All of us have this goal for her.
That's kind of mean.
This was like, oh, wow, we need to talk about this. What does that mean? And she was like, I just like playing with someone by myself, like just one-on-one. And it makes so much sense, because it's so hard for her to like fit herself into like a, if it's hard enough to have pressured speech in a one-on-one, like do. Imagine when you have all these girls and it's like do. And so no wonder she just sits there like a ping pong, like, I got nothing here. I can't fit in. And so, yeah. And then the psychologist was like, you know, maybe it's, you know, not maybe. She's like, I think we need to, Laura, discuss that it's okay if Ashlyn doesn't want to play in a group. You know, like,
yeah.
And to instead, you know, kind of funnel her into, oh, okay, well, let's try and create scenarios where you can have a good buddy and you can have these meaningful one-on-one interactions that you would prefer. So perfect example right there why, you know, a team approach and having a psychologist on the team could make a big difference.
Yeah, and it really sounds like it's helping her along this process. So I'm actually very, very glad to hear that, that she does have one on her team.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really awesome.
So anyways, talk about some treatments that, if you will, regarding anxiety that you wanted to touch on.
Yes. So it is the top three that are really recommended as far as it is as far as therapy a purchase go is called CBT, which is called cognitive behavioral therapy, which I've actually been in during my life, and that's how I've kind of been able to kind of rewire my brain and how I think about my talking, because I used to be so judgmental about my talking, and I've been very open about this, but it's whenever I was around the ages of like 18 or 19, I wanted to talk perfect. I mean, because I'm a perfectionist at itself. I like to get things done. I like to do things perfect. But I kind of had to rewire my thoughts and my brain and how I thought about my talking, and kind of learned, hey, there's nothing wrong with having a speech disorder. This is how my brain works. I mean, it's not something that I chose at all. I was born with this. And it's also just kind of working through the thought processes before I went in and talked with a person. So like not trying to, I think they call it catastrophizing, and just saying like, oh no, this is going to go awful. I'm not going to be able to get my words out. I now think, no, this is going to go well. I know my speech strategies. I know that I can take time. I know it's okay if I take time, and I know that there's nothing wrong with my voice, and you know, I worked hard for my voice, so I'm going to use it. So that's how it's really helped me, and I feel like it's beneficial to also hear how it's helped an actual person with apraxia than just saying CBT, because then it's just like, okay, what's that? Like, I'll have to look this up now.
Yeah.
And it's also, the second thing is called mindfulness. So that's,
I love mindfulness.
And that's actually what I did too. Also is mindfulness too, where I don't feel like my brain's all up in the air and I'm like around the room and I'm like doing like circles and stuff. I'm actually present. I'm paying attention to what's in front of me. I'm not getting lost in my anxious thoughts, and I'm not getting lost inside my brain. I'm trying to also stay present. I'm trying to focus on my thoughts, what thoughts are good for me, what thoughts are really not good for me to think, and that's how that's also helped me. And it's kind of going into the third thing now as well. It's called acceptance and commitment therapy, also known as ACT. And that's also what I did too. So I did all three of these treatments. And actually ACT is what helped me actually accept my speech disorder too, because I used to be in denial about it, and I've been open about that too. Yeah, I've been very
open. I mean, I know you're open, but like, you were in denial. Like, I think it feels like you've always known. Were you in denial about how it affected you, or?
I was in denial that I wouldn't outgrow it, because many misconceptions saying you'll outgrow it, blah blah blah, and it's like, people know that's not how it works. I'm so tired of that.
Yeah.
And now I'm just like, so like, it was kind of like this like pressure of like, oh no, it's one day I will outgrow this when you don't. And I just kind of had to come to terms that acceptance is an everyday process. So what I mean by that, and what I really learned, is that we don't just say, hey, I accept this.
Right. And
that's it. It's not like that. I wish it was, because that would make it like so much more easier, and it would make life like perfect. But well, maybe not perfect, because perfect it isn't real. But going back to my brain, but it's kind of what I mean by that, is that now I have to like wake up every single day and I accept my talking for what it is for that day. Because hey, there might be days when my talking is more harder for reasons I really don't really know, if I'm honest. Mm-hmm. And it's some days my talking may be more easier when I'm like, oh, this is fun. I'm just gonna keep on talking. This is really fun. And I just have to accept every day for what it is. And then I've also talked about this too. It's a part of my own acceptance too, is that during night time and such, I'll kind of go through my day and I'll just kind of go back and I'll like notice thoughts that didn't serve me well that day. That probably sounds like a very Gen Z thing, but I'll look
it's
at
what
thoughts.
I call my woo-woo meditation stuff.
Yeah,
that's good. It does help.
Yeah, just like thoughts that didn't serve me well that day, and it's at night time as I go to bed and I hit my head on the pillow, I'll say bye to those thoughts and I'll be like, you're not coming back. You're going to stay in this day. And then the next day I wake up and I do the same thing over. And I've found that this has helped me a lot.
So was that something you were taught to, or something you've developed on your own?
That's actually something that I developed on my own, is kind of saying goodbye to thoughts. But as far as like waking up every single day and accepting myself for who I am in that day, that was definitely through therapy, which I am such an advocate for. It's nothing to be ashamed about. I have people shocked that I'm as open about going, and I'm like, there's absolutely nothing wrong. I personally love it. I think every person could use one, because personally, and this might be a little rant, but I think it's nice to have like a non-judgmental person and just being able to rant and talk about things and to help you process things. Every person could use one. So I don't feel like it's just people with speech disorders, but there are these treatments that are research evident proven, which I would really like to, you know, point out. Research evident proven, that
evidence
have been
based
proven to
in
help.
The house.
Because that's what we preach on, Laura.
That's right.
For sure.
Well, thank you so much. Hopefully this, we'll see the feedback we get. We like feedback, everyone.
We love
it. I mean, yeah. So
give it to us.
Give it. And we will do another video if we need to. We'll do some informational graphics, but yeah.
We'll do as much as we have to, guys.
So true. We are always here. Did you see, Jordan, I'm taking a side note with our listeners real fast, but
Do it.
Someone tagged you in the Apraxia Kids group with a shirt that says, caffeinate before advocate.
And I saw that.
Did you see that? That is so, but then people were like, someone tagged me in it and she was like, this is so Jordan. I'm like, okay, just because I'm not as open about my coffee addiction doesn't mean I don't have one either. So we both need that shirt next time. I mean, you have your awesome Fighting for My Voice shirt, but next time maybe we'll be on here with Caffeinate and Advocate. That's actually going to be a cool podcast name.
Where is it at?
I don't know. We'll have to go back and see where we can get it.
I know, right? Because it's actually a parent made me a little cup holder thing that says Caffeinate and Advocate. So it might be from the same person.
Oh,
it
yeah.
Posted a picture of it. And I'm like, yeah, this is me. Because if you follow my page, you know, Jordan spends $4.22 a day on coffee every single day, and I know the price off the top of my head.
I think it's funny that your readers, since you are so open, have just started sending you Starbucks cards now. They're like, here.
I know. And I feel so bad
with your addiction. I know you do, but I always tell you to be a cheerful receiver.
Yeah. But you've really helped me with, so thank you for that.
All right. Well, anything else you want to add?
No, I think that's it. But thank you guys for tuning into this live. I hope that we were able to answer every single question. If there are more questions, comment, message, send them in. We are more than happy to do a part 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, as many as we have to get this message across and such. And I just also really appreciate Laura as well, because I'm going to brag about her for a second. So get ready. Because you're like, oh no, hide. No. Anyways, because yes, Laura is an SLP, but Laura is also a mother to a daughter with a praxia as well. So she gets this lens. She gets like two different lenses. She sees her child every single day, but she also has the SLP connections as well. And Laura has always been very open to hearing more things, which some SLPs, if I'm honest, might not want to hear, but Laura's been very receptive of it. So I just really appreciate that side of her. And if you also haven't bought the book Overcoming a Praxia, just a shameless promo, you should buy that book. That's awesome. But yeah.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
And I'm going to brag on you and just say, I, of course, listen to what you have to say, because I'm grateful for someone who is vulnerable to share, as I've said to you before, the first person perspective. Not everyone is willing to do that, but it helps a lot of people. So,
thank you a lot. I appreciate you.
I appreciate you. Okay. All right, we better go now.
I know, we've been talking. Okay, so we will talk to you guys soon, and have a great day. Okay, bye.